You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month, brought to you by Hands On Gloves, the all-in-one shedding, grooming, bathing gloves. In 2018, a media company known as Cygames had a wild idea. What if someone turned famous racehorses into cute animated girls? After a television series launch, Uma Musume, Pretty Derby, was born. Uma literally meaning horse and Musume meaning girl. If you haven't heard of it, hang on for a wild ride as Michael Cox says it has invigorated interest in horses in Japan. Imagine being able to speak the language of horses, to understand what they're saying without words. At MontyRobertsUniversity.com, you can. With more than 900 video lessons, Monty Roberts and other leading horsemen teach you how to build trust, confidence, and cooperation, not through force, but through communication. You'll see Monty demonstrate his world-famous join-up method and explain subtle gestures, body language, and timing that horses use to tell us exactly what they need. Whether you're starting a young horse, solving behavioral issues, or just wanting a better partnership, you'll learn how kindness and science together make training more effective and more humane. If you can't come take a class in person yet, you can still learn directly from Monty anytime, anywhere. Start learning the language of horses today at MontyRobertsUniversity.com. Well, I'm fortunate today to sit down with Michael Cox. We've been together in a course for the last 5 days. I'm really interested in some of your background, and we've had some cool discussions about horses, mostly, and also influence, which is really fun to talk to you about because you live in Hong Kong now, but you're from Australia, and I'd love to know a little bit more about how you went from Australia to Hong Kong. But let's start with your horsey background. We like to start there. You have a little bit of horses in your childhood?
Yeah, and great to be here. Thanks for having me on. I'm a horse racing journalist now, but I grew up around standardbreds, harness racing, a little town, city called Newcastle in New South Wales, Australia.
Right.
And in the Hunter Valley region, which a few horse people might know about, is a thoroughbred breeding center. But my background was in harness racing. My grandfather is a trainer and an all-round horseman. You know, I now write about horse racing, but I use the word horseman very sparingly when it comes to trainers because of his ability to work with their feet, teeth, everything in between. And he's still alive and a great influence on my life. And as it would come to be, back into horse racing. But I had a childhood around horses and racetracks, and I think that influenced me later on. But I didn't get as hands-on as some of my relatives. My cousins are successful horse people.
Are they?
Yeah, but in harness racing in Australia. Mm-hmm. But I went a different route and ended up watching, observing, and then writing about horses. It took a long way to get there, but I ended up being a horse racing journalist.
Were you a horse racing journalist in Australia, or did you change over when you were in Hong Kong?
Actually, I was a sports writer in Australia at a newspaper in Wollongong, Australia. And
I've never heard of Wollongong.
Wow, it's a working class city just near Sydney. I grew up in one working class city north of Sydney, and I moved to one south of Sydney to become a sports writer at a newspaper. That newspaper had a great racing section. Now, I wasn't writing about horse racing, but the horse racing, I was writing about a game called rugby league, which I loved, and that was my dream to cover and commentate that sport. But when the horse racing beat writer, as you guys would call it,
that's right,
was his specialty.
That's right.
He moved to another newspaper, and I sensed an opportunity to have a specialty of my own. I said, I know a little bit about horses and horse racing from growing up. I still watched horse racing and loved it. And they gave me a chance as a horse racing reporter at this little paper in Australia. It was well known for its racing section, though. And from there, after about a year, I really took to it. And I was recruited out of Australia to go to the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. It's a major newspaper in Hong Kong, English language newspaper covering Hong Kong horse racing. And I really didn't know much about Hong Kong horse racing, but it sounded like a great adventure. So
yeah,
I jumped on a plane and took it up. I didn't think I'd be there for very long. I thought it'd be 2 years would look great on my resume.
Okay.
I thought it would be a great experience to live and work in Hong Kong and cover racing there, but it lasted a bit longer than that. That was 2011, and I've been in and around Hong Kong horse racing ever since.
Yeah, and so, and not just sports in general. You went straight into the race.
I'd still love to say that I write about other sports, but not anymore. It's all about horse racing. I've started my own website called Idle Horse. It's IDOL Horse, where it's after 8 years at the South China Morning Post and a couple of other publications, I started my own website. It's a multi-language website. We publish in Japanese and Chinese as well.
Amazing.
The name Idle Horse really refers to the horse as central to the sport and our storytelling in it.
Yeah, you're not saying idle, I-D-L-E. You're saying no. I-D-O-L, horse.com?
Yeah, definitely not a stationary horse at this stage. The horse is an idol, and I guess it's a nod to our huge Japanese fan base. I'd say more than 60% of our readers are in Japan. And this is a phrase that they would use, an idol horse, like a horse that they look up to and idolized. I've never seen anything like the reverence for the horse that the Japanese racing fans have. Their champion horses are just honored, revered in a way that I've never seen anywhere else. You know, retirement ceremonies for horses that are finishing their career on a certain day. I've been there in sub-zero temperatures to see a retirement ceremony 30 minutes after the last race, and I've seen 30,000 people stay back just to honour this horse, to see him into retirement, people giving speeches about the horse and photos, and he parades in front of the crowd, and there's statues, just the way that they rise, the atmosphere on those big race days in Japan really inspired me to try and link the racing world together.
Yeah, because I don't hear much, not here, about the Japanese racing. I know people do come over and buy horses and take them back, but I don't hear a lot about the training methodology. Now, you've spent the last 5 days being filled with our training methodology, or really it's the horses, isn't it? It's the horse language. We've been talking about the nature of horses, the nature of equus. Do they study in the same way we do?
I would say, look, one of the great takeaways of doing the course here for the last 5 days is that my entire focus has been on thoroughbred horse racing pretty much for the last 15 years. And hearing Monty use the phrase again and again, a horse is a horse.
Yeah.
and their nature runs far deeper, and their instincts run far deeper than just the last couple of thousand years and just racing. I would say that Hong Kong racing is a real melting pot, and I've seen there's different trainers from different backgrounds, jockeys from different backgrounds come and race in Hong Kong. And going to Japan, their training is categorized by, I would say, like a real attention to detail, great facilities.
Yeah.
So Japanese racing, I guess it's a mystery to people. You say to people, I'm an expert in Japanese horse racing. And the first thing they say is like, oh, they have racing in Japan.
Oh, there you go.
And it's they have the biggest racing in Japan. They have the biggest crowds. They have the biggest betting turnover. And they're breeding now arguably the best horses. You know, they're really pursuit of the best broodmares, you know, and based on performance, it's a really interesting mindset there. I'd say their philosophy towards horses is that they should be bred based on performance, not necessarily pedigree or even type. It's like the best performed and most suited horse are the ones we should breed.
So they don't really believe the pedigree determines that, or they're just more focused on that?
There's a focus on pedigree in the sense that stallions need to win big races to prove their worth to go to stud. Mm-hmm. But I think you've got to set it against the trend in horse racing. There's a commercial precedent in horse racing in the West where horses are retired to stud very early. Mm-hmm. Two-year-old colts, they win their big race, or three-year-old. There's a tendency to protect that value and get them off to stud fast before they lose value. I think Japan has really adopted an old school mentality in that, no, let's see this horse race at 4 and 5 or even 6.
Love it.
To prove their worth. Like, let's see soundness. Let's see, rather than just precocity, stamped upon horses. So there's an emphasis on longevity, durability, and it's really starting to show in the way that their horses perform well all around the world, and I think is having an influence in other countries.
You know, Dad loves racing horses. He doesn't love all the negativity that you hear in the industry because he didn't start off in an industry that had that much negativity. So maybe he's old school in that he believes in motivating the horse to just do what they love to do. What's one of the more unique things maybe that you learned about Dad's philosophy in horse racing this week?
Wow, that's a great question because, you know, firstly, I had the privilege of talking to Monty one-on-one for his story that'll be on our website soon. And, you know, it was nice to talk to someone who could provide constructive critique of the horse racing industry, but still sit there and say, the first thing he said was, I love horse racing.
Yeah.
There's nothing inherently wrong about it. I just wish it could be done differently. And I think that's, we're on the same page there where, you know, I think there's a lot of, people are very defensive in horse racing, you know, and part of that is justified in the sense that there are groups of people in broader society that don't want horse racing to exist and actively pursue that agenda. So I guess, you know, for people in horse racing, I have a lot of empathy for them in the sense that they feel protective of their life. This is they dedicate their life to the horse. They're told that their sport is cruel. They're told that it shouldn't exist. And a lot of people, this is their, not just their livelihood, but their life. They just want to be around horses, whether they're paid or not. So firstly, I would say that put me at ease. You know, like, it's nice to hear somewhere where we were on the same page. Like, we don't want horse racing to cease to exist.
Exactly.
Look, I would say that the use of the whip is a point of discussion that, you know, I would say that so much of horse racing, the perspective I would have gained from this weekend, I'll come back a step and just say the perspective I would have gained is I can see how the commercial pressures in horse racing have mounted to the point where taking a breath and employing some patience might sound like a good idea, but a lot of people feel like that's just not practical. But that just can't be done because we've got a job to do and we've got to get these horses through, and it's big business now.
It is.
You know, and these horses are commodified, you know, like, we've got to get it from, you know, from the breeding barn to the sales ring to the racetrack. Everything has this date. We've got a deadline. You know, and I just think that there's within that, I hope that racing can take a breath and employ some more of this this thinking, in the sense that, I got a lot out of spending time with Monty, and you know, I work with words, so I remember sayings, and the one that sticks with me this week is, you know, if you approach a horse trying to get what you want to get done in 15 minutes, it might take you all day. If you approach it like you've got all day, it might only take you 15 minutes. And that's going to stick with me in that way. And also coming to understand the horse as a species, as an animal, there's probably a school of thought, well, but the thoroughbreds are different, racehorses are different. And that underneath that, no, the instincts, the way they see, the way they hear, how they feel,
yes,
just the same.
Just the same. Their horses are horses, that's right. But there is something about a well-bred, I know it's pedigree sometimes, but an athlete that was born to be an athlete too, that's fun. It's exciting. They're smart. It's just like any sport, really. The athletes at the top of their game are the most interesting people in that they're motivated and they have big hearts and they practice their routines. And, you know, I think of horses as big athletes who enjoy what they're doing. Because if they don't enjoy running fast, they never make it to the races. They'll do something else. They'll jump. They'll event. They'll do, at least in this country, that's what we retrain for. It's aftercare, right? Are you big on aftercare?
Yeah, and it's a big philosophy of and a principle underpinning our website, Idle Horse. You know, there's a movement in horse racing to really, and some great initiatives all around the world in terms of understanding lifelong care. And I like that, right. Even some of the advocates for aftercare, which is commonly called, we're like, should we be calling it something else? We should be like after.
Yeah.
What about horses that don't get to the races?
Right. Exactly.
You know, like, let's talk about it as lifelong care and seeing the thoroughbred as this very special breed that you touched on, you know, like that, yeah, they're bred to race, they're bred to compete. And this is what's special about them, mm-hmm. right? This is what captivates mm-hmm. horse racing fans is the idea that this horse wants to win. You know, and this desire to win.
Yeah, they've got that suave thing, you know? I mean, when Dad first went over to Hong Kong, he checked into the hotel, and the guy who was helping him out, he says, "Why are you here? Why are you visiting?" You know, and he said, "Well, I came to look at a horse named Pakistan Star." The guy went bananas. He said, "That's our hero. Pakistan Star's our hero." And he said, "Really? Why is that? Why is Pakistan Star a hero to you?" And he said, "Because he wants to dominate the sport. He's super talented, but he also doesn't want anybody to tell him how to do it."
Yeah, he might just stop in a race sometime, right? The willfulness, the character, he really captivated the imagination of racing fans and myself. I was very lucky to cover his career, but and just on that aftercare thing about the thoroughbred and what's special about them, is understanding that, yes, they're bred to race, bred to compete, finely tuned athletes, but that they're still useful for other things. Mm-hmm. They're great in equine therapy, their sensitivity, their instincts and how fast they're great in equestrian sports. I think aftercare, I'm happy to see initiatives like in Australia where, you know, it's illegal to send horses to slaughter. Working towards lifelong tracking and accountability of horses beyond their racing years as well. So I think progressive racing jurisdictions can see that society's values have changed, the level of accountability, what's expected if you want to race horses has changed and they're taking the right steps.
That's good. So what's the opportunity right now? I mean, I didn't know that much about the market in Japan for racing. Are they exporting horses from Japan now too?
Yeah. So, Japan racing is thriving in the sense that it's really riding a wave of popularity. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it is. Pretty savvy marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's a... What's interesting about the popularity of horse racing in Japan, look, I'm going to go on a tangent for your listeners here about like what has caused part of the surge in popularity, because I'm trying to explain like why are there capacity crowds at racetracks in Japan? Why is there such big betting?
Well, first,
no, it's in decline, right? And people and young people too in racing. So there is a part of what has helped the popularity of racing in Japan is that there is an anime series called Uma Musume. Okay, hang with me on the concept of Uma Musume Pretty Derby. Okay, it's an anime series and a mobile phone game. Okay, the concept is in the show that girls horse girls mm-hmm. are born into normal families with a tail, and they are basically like the reincarnation of champion horses from years past, even colts and fillies, right? Okay. But they're all girls in this show, and they take on the characteristics of that former racehorse. Mm-hmm. Like, Gold Ship or Silent Suzuka. And yeah, and in the show, which is themes around destiny, and these girls are drawn in this cartoon. So an anime is a Japanese cartoon TV show. Okay, and these girls are drawn to go to Tokyo and learn to be racehorses, and they race, and it tells the story of their lives, and they sing songs. And yes, this sounds like the weirdest thing in the world, right?
Totally and different.
It is by far the most popular mobile phone game in Japan, immensely popular.
There is a game to it too.
There is a game, and you train the horses, the horse girls. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, now that I'm actually telling an audience and people out in the West, it seems kind of normal to me now, having lived in Asia for a while, like that, yeah, there's a mobile phone game about horse girls that are reincarnated like from real racehorses that you train on your phone, and you – and it's hugely addictive and popular, and people love it. And it has, it is popular beyond horse racing, just to be clear.
Okay. Yeah.
This is the most popular anime series. These people watching the show don't know anything about horse racing.
Okay.
But
is that good for horse racing?
Though? Well, it's good in the sense that they're so meticulous in the way that they've charted these horses' careers, that their characteristics of the horses. So when they bring a new character into the show, they go and talk to the horse's former trainer, the handlers, and say, hey, can you tell me something quirky about the horse? So what's great about it is that it identifies horses as individuals that have individual personalities and characters and quirky traits, right? Like, you know, and they choose not just the best, most famous horses. They choose horses with, like, really defining characteristics. So Gold Ship is – his temperament's a little bit on the warm side. Yeah, he's hot and he does unpredictable things. He's a bit of a Pakistan Star type character but very talented. You know, Twin Turbo, a horse that wasn't a champion, is well known in the show because he was a tearaway leader that ran out to big leads. And I think what it's shown a non-racing audience is that all of these horses have a personality, have their own character traits and individuality. And it has brought non-racing people to the races and got them interested in it.
That's so fascinating. That really is because, yeah, we talked this week about how some people, when I was growing up, treated horses like farm animals, right? That they didn't have really any pain. You know, you could hit them and they didn't really have the pain that we feel, you know, when you hit, which is completely the opposite, as we've learned. But this farm animal thing doesn't speak well for a personality in a horse, right? And so maybe you're starting with blank people as far as their horsemanship goes, and now you're feeding them stuff that the average farmer might not know if he just thinks that horse is a plow.
Right, yeah, that they're coming to it with the idea that each horse is an individual with its own character. I think it's beautiful, and it also brings forward, you know, one of the issues with horse racing is that I mentioned earlier, the commercial pressures, and the big one is betting. This is what funds horse racing. This is what underpins it, and it's what underpins racing in Japan. It's why it's so well resourced, is because the betting is huge.
And in Hong Kong.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, these two places are where if racing does wither on the vine in other parts of the world, which it is, and it's closed, I think these are the two places where it'll still remain for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's well funded. It's got a good system. But maybe Uma Musume and some measures from the Hong Kong Jockey Club. So the Hong Kong Jockey Club's big push at the moment, despite being like this gambling-centric industry, is to really emphasize racing as a sport, first and foremost. You know, a living animal and a competition between them. Yeah. Let's set the betting aside and understand this as a sport rather than just a real life roulette wheel or something.
Yeah,
that's just luck and somewhere where you can win money. And I think that's something that Japanese racing has long done a good job with.
Fantastic. Mm. Well, we would be remiss if we didn't bring up two of our favorite people that are in the world of jockeys, and that's Douglas White and Felix Coetzee. And Did you say that you learned of Monty through them?
I think I'm pretty sure that the first time I heard the name Monty Roberts was from Douglas White. Mm-hmm. And Douglas White, just for the listeners, is a South African jockey based in Hong Kong. We went there in the mid-90s, and who came to dominate Hong Kong horse racing. He won 13 straight jockeys premierships. That's a tough thing to do in a jurisdiction where the world's best jockeys gravitate. There's huge prize money, and the Hong Kong Jockey Club seek to recruit. And when someone wins a few straight championships, they'll try and find a jockey that can beat him, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. They'll be like, well, we can't have somebody be too dominant, right? So, yeah. So Douglas White's achievement, no one's come close to that. And I don't like saying sporting records will never be broken. Mm-hmm. That one won't be broken. It's the toughest of the Hong Kong racing records, and maybe in world racing to do it. And he's such the most competitive person I've ever met, the most focused individual sportsman. Mm-hmm. But he had this side of him where he was thinking about the horse, how the horse thinks, how to get the best out of this horse. And you know, what you see in Hong Kong, it's a real melting pot of talent. I mentioned those jockeys they get from other places, you know, South Africa is one of them, but French champion, mm-hmm. French jockeys, champion Australian jockeys, jockeys from all around the world and from Hong Kong as well, all with their own style. You see their own, the characteristics of that country brought forward. And, you know, typically compared to some of his rivals, particularly Australians who are pretty aggressive, let's say, using the whip, mm-hmm. strong use of the whip, mm-hmm. is a big part of Australian racing culture. Mm-hmm. Douglas wasn't that kind of jockey. He used a whip. You're expected to, mm-hmm. and have to in a race, but that wasn't how he got the best out of horses. And as I spoke to him and wrote many, many stories about Douglas, you know, I heard it. He was different. Mm-hmm. He is different to the other jockeys in the way that he speaks about the horse and how it came to win the race that it did.
Yeah.
And Monty's philosophies, mm-hmm. as now mm-hmm. obvious, it really flows through.
Yeah. So I think he came to two different Monty special trainings, believe it or not. And then Felix came as well. Maybe the second time Douglas came, I think Felix came with them too.
Yeah, so that's Felix. Felix Kutsi is another South African jockey who's now a riding instructor for young jockeys in the Hong Kong Jockey Club, yeah. and a really great mentor. And it's interesting to talk about him in this context of Monty's special training and Monty's training in that you can – I understand more the way they are now, mm-hmm. having mm-hmm. been through it, than before, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Their demeanor, mm-hmm. the calmness, the centered focus that they both bring to everything they do.
Yes.
Familially,
yes, because they brought their children here and they're mm-hmm. wonderful. And I think they love the horses.
Well, that's right. They horse sick. You know, is that a phrase? Sick for horses. Just got it. They've got that. They love horses no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. They just the horse is everything and central to their life, and they care for them. And now, and Douglas White now is a trainer mm-hmm. in Hong Kong, and that's been an interesting transition for him. He's quite new in his career, and maybe only 4 years in, 4 to 5 years in, and I'm interested to see where that goes, mm-hmm. where he's, you know, and I do think that his horsemanship, mm-hmm. you know, he's obviously, the first thing people would say about Douglas White is that he's competitive, almost ruthless in the way that he would pursue mm-hmm. success. And I don't mean ruthless in any unfair sense, but just the dedication.
He wants the best horses. He wants the best out of them.
The absolute dedication mm-hmm. to the, when he was a jockey, pursuing rides, mm-hmm. studying form, mm-hmm. developing relationships, Yeah, smart. Yeah, really great operator, and changed the whole way Hong Kong racing
did
operates.
He?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the thing that Douglas White changed in Hong Kong horse racing was that prior to his 13 straight seasons of domination, it really wasn't close many times either. You know, it was 13 straight years of and beat six different jockeys, finished second. It was quite a social scene before that. It was a bit more easygoing before Douglas sort of set about things. And he would come home from the races, though, and watch replays and already be on the phone to try and get the best ride for the next race a month from now. Mm. This wasn't how it worked before, but this is how it works now. Mm. If you want to be the best in Hong Kong, you got to have you'd be organized. You have to know who am I riding in a month, 6 weeks from now even, like really getting ahead. Hey, I see you've got a good young horse, and not just, I guess, where you saw Douglas's horsemanship coming, where he would identify the jockeys are all like freelance, like mercenary almost. They may have a relationship with the trainer, but they're free to pursue whatever ride they want. Douglas would identify a horse that he wanted to ride in a race. But I think the next level that he bought was to start to say, well, here's the type of race that I'd like to see in, and here's the type of tactics you should employ, and here's the type of gear that you should put on it. And almost, I mean, I had a trainer tell me, Michael Chang, a great, great Hong Kong trainer. I went to him to interview him after a win that Douglas had ridden once for him, and he just said, look, I've got nothing to say. Douglas White trained this horse, and if he starts training, we're all in trouble. And so Douglas is now training, and look, it's a tough place. He's probably not where he wants to be on the ladder just yet because of his competitive spirit. But, you know, I have no doubt that he will be, in the long run, a huge success.
That's cool. That is very cool because I love his philosophy too. Well, if there's anything that you got out of this that you're going to take to your writing, I'd love to know about it. What do you... Does this,
to journalism, well, I guess I was hopeful of a few things coming here. You know, I was very curious, and it's the Hong Kong off season,
right?
It's hot in Hong Kong between July and September, so they don't race, and it's not a place to be and relaxing. It's very hot and humid, so I was keen to go somewhere, and I spoke to Douglas and decided to come here. Now, one of the things is, I grew up around horses, but Hong Kong, you don't have any contact with the animal itself. Mm. And I could just feel that horse racing journalism in general is all about who's going to win and why, you know, and I'm sensing a disconnect between what's written and the actual animal itself. Mm. And dare I say it, the people who work with them, right?
Even.
You know, that... Yeah. We can ask him about the chances and what they think about this horse, but if we really don't have much of an idea about the nature of the animal itself, there's a disconnect there between the sport and the journalist. And our job as racing journalists and horse racing journalists has become a really important one, I believe, in that if there's a huge gap, we talked about it before. Horses 100 years ago were the car.
Mm-hmm.
Horse racing was Formula One, right? And now it's not. You've got the vast majority of people in society have never, they may admire the idea of a horse. They may like the look of a horse, even a horse racing fan. But have they actually touched a horse? Have they worked with a horse? Do they know what horses are like? There's a growing separation between the two, and I think it's a real threat to horse racing.
Yeah, I do too.
Because you know they would just see it as every time they see an accident, or every time they see a horse retired, it's easier to just say, well, just to be dismissive of it. When actually the people that work within that sport, the people who love it and are close to it. They love horses. They love racing. They want it to be run safely and fairly. And I think that I was hoping to gain a greater, at the very least, a greater understanding of the animal so that I can relate to the people who work with them better and tell better stories. So I knew that I'd come away with that.
Yeah, that's nice.
Right. But nice. I think whatever else happened was a bonus. But I think I gained a lot more than that in terms of my outlook towards horses, and how universal some of the things Monty talks about are.
That's nice for people too, and their families and everything. Yeah,
leadership. So that, to answer your question, that's part of how it will help my writing, I hope, is that I can relate to. I'll have something to talk about with Douglas at least when I get back. I'll have some. What did you do during off season? That's a big thing people talk about in Hong Kong racing when we get back together at the track down the back stretch, as you guys would call it, in the September. We'll be like, what did you do in your off season? Yeah. And they'll be talking about their extravagant holidays to the south of France, and I'll say I went to Monty's farm, and we'll have something to talk about at least. But I think that something Monty said today that was, that has flowed through the 5 days that I've spent here was, I asked about using a voice, talking to horses. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Was it's not about how much or what you say, but the tone of your voice is really important. Measured breathing, the kindness, and coming at it." And he very quickly added that, you know, this is for all of your life. This is for your relationships with people and your in your job, in the way you relate to people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that there's an awful lot of, I think that will help me a lot of perspective on horse racing as well, a lot of perspective on thoroughbreds, and to start to see the horse as a overall thing. Honestly, just how I'm coming away from here with a different perspective on horse racing, just how intense it is. And you know, that isn't necessarily a criticism. It's just a pressure sport. Mm-hmm. Where we're asking the horses to do amazing things, right at the limits of their athletic capabilities, and you know, there was a great perspective there to see, like, you know, that I was the only horse racing person in the course. I think that was a great thing because it taught me that, you know, the horse world is a lot bigger than just horse racing, and it needs to be. And I think people in horse racing would benefit from thinking that way. Yeah. We're connecting more with equestrian. We're connecting more with pleasure horses and that broader community that see horses as part of their life.
Mm. We'll get out of our silos a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Michael Cox, for coming here and becoming a friend, and for your expression of your love for horses. I can see it. You might get horse sick. Watch out.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's my takeaway. I didn't know what I was going to get when I wouldn't have described myself before I came here as someone that was good with horses. In fact, compared to some of the really talented people in my own family, I would say, no, I'm not that guy. I'm the one who writes about them. I'm the one who looks at them.
Right.
But, you know, watching some of your wonderful staff and Monty himself get down in the ring at 91 years of age is just really special. I can't wait to get my hands on some horses and work more closely with them. I think that's the number one thing I take from here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. It's Debbie Laux with Horsemanship Radio. You know, one of the best parts of spending time with our horses is grooming. It's where trust really begins to grow. That's why I love my hands-on gloves. These incredible grooming gloves fit just like your favorite pair of riding gloves, but they have these flexible rubber nodules that gently curry and massage and shed all at once. You can use them wet or dry, and they're perfect for bathing. What I really love is that horses who normally shy away from grooming, they lean into it when you use your hands-on gloves. It feels like a spa day and not a chore. They're great for dogs and cats and those muddy legs after turnout, we all know. So visit handsongloves.com. That's handsongloves.com. And discover why everyone's saying, get your hands on. For details about today's show, go to horsemanshipradio.com, where you can find links and photos and more information about our guests. We love connecting with the listeners. So please follow us on Facebook under facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Instagram. That's instagram.com/Monty_Roberts.
Many thanks to our sponsors, too. That's HandsOnGloves.com and MontyRobertsUniversity.com. Be sure to visit all the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.